Welcome to a weekly review of North Dakota's legislative news. Now, here's your host, Dave Thompson, with North Dakota Legislative Review.
And I'm Dave Thompson. Thanks for joining us for North Dakota Legislative Review. A lot has been happening now as the session is starting to wind down. You see, the third period of the hockey game has started, and I always call that the where you get to the conference committee. So a lot of things have happened. For example, there's been some action on constitutional measures. After an initiated constitutional measure passes, the legislature will review it. That's according to a bill that passed in the House this week. If the legislature turns the bill down, it will be back on the ballot for a second try. Now it's going back to the Senate to see if the Senate will agree with House changes to that. There's also been talk about the legacy fund. You know, their supporters are looking at the possibility of a study to study what to do with the proceeds from the legacy fund for the next 2 years. The supporters want to limit it to one-time spending, to infrastructure projects similar to that. They call it similar to oil tax buckets, but the current going thing is calling it silos. And of course, the House has revived an income tax buy-down bill. It would use $50 million of legacy proceeds starting in 2021. It was added to the tax commissioner's budget with the goal to get income taxes in North Dakota to zero. Governor Burgum's second veto of the session is renewing a constitutional debate that began in the last session. Political correspondent Chad Mira caught up with the Senate Majority Leader about that controversial bill.
Joining me now is Senate Majority Leader Senator Rich Wardner. Senator, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Now, Governor Burgum's latest veto, Senate Bill 2055, this bill would have created certain authority for a budget section. Tell us what the goal was of this bill.
Well, the goal was to put in statute what the legislature's been doing for years, allowing the budget section to make some decisions during the interim. And so that's what we did. We put it in statute so that we felt that it would pass constitutional muster. Before that, as you know, in the lawsuit, the Attorney General brought it in on the lawsuit along with the other stuff that the governor had vetoed last time. And he said, it's not constitutional, we can't. And so by putting it in statute, we felt it was verifying what we had been doing.
Of course, as you've heard, Governor Burgum's statement when he made the veto is saying this bill kind of disregards a previous Supreme Court ruling over that decision. Do you feel like this goes against a ruling that we had just last biennium?
Well, before we didn't have anything in statute that allowed us to do it. This way, we put it in statute, voted on by the full legislature to allow us to do it. And so we feel that it gives us the flexibility to take care of business during the interims when the session is not, you know, all of the legislators are not here.
And during the session, this bill, only one vote between the Senate and House was against it. So near unanimous in both the Senate and House. Why do you think there's such broad support for this among the legislature?
Well, I think they realize that it's important if we're going to stay with biennial sessions. I think it is a factor that we have in statute a way to take care of anything that comes up in between that the budget section would take care of it. And most of the time we don't have very much, and sometimes it's very minimal, but it's still, we have it there, and we don't have to bring the whole legislature back and put it to put them into session.
Okay. Senator Rich Wardner, thanks for your time.
And we're now joined by Representative Don Vigasaw from Cooperstown. He's a Republican, and he also chairs one of the three permanent subcommittees of House Appropriations. Yours is Government Operations.
That's correct, Dave, and thank you for having me today. Yes, Government Operations Division is responsible for 24 budgets during the session. We had 11 in the first half and now 13 in the second half. I really like this particular section because you get a wide variety of issues before you, some of the real small budgets, and then some very large ones too. Some of the other sections work on, you know, larger budgets such as the Water Commission or Human Services. I think in this half, I think the Human Services Division had like two bills to work on. We had 13. So I like that because you get a really wide look at state government.
The most complicated bill you dealt with may have been commerce, correct?
We didn't have commerce in our section.
You didn't.
We used to.
Yeah.
Probably one of the most difficult ones, not difficult, but interesting, was information technology. And that was in the first half. The big issue there was that the governor would like to see his cabinet agencies all unify and have all their ITD functions handled by the department rather than each department having their own IT staff. And that involved moving 145 employees out of several agencies into ITD. And I know that in the first half in the House, we took that out. We just felt that was kind of a big leap for one session. And our idea is to take a handful of agencies. Let's give it a try. Let's see if it really creates the efficiencies that they said it would. And then if it does, we'll move forward and unify other agencies.
Now, you'll probably see that again in a conference committee.
Oh, for sure, because I've heard that the Senate is a little more amenable to adding more agencies in and possibly doing the entire IT unification. So we'll work that out in conference.
I know there were a lot of issues to do that. You know, cybersecurity is a big issue, and that was a big part of that. And one of the reasons why they really wanted to unify, to have everybody under one umbrella.
Yes, and I think there is going to be efficiencies, and the cybersecurity is an amazing thing that's going on. We need to strengthen our network. It's 5 million hits a day that come through. It's just unbelievable, and our department has done a great job. But you're right, cybersecurity is one of the top initiatives of the ITD budget this time.
Since you are a member of Appropriations Committee, you're part of the budget section.
That's correct.
And you know about the veto that the governor did.
Sure do.
Senate has overridden the veto. What are the odds are it's going to be overridden by the House?
Oh, Dave, I think that's just that's a very good chance it will be. You know, that Senate Bill 2055, which the governor vetoed, the legislature tried to outline, based on the lawsuit from 2 years ago, we received counsel, you know, from our legislative counsel, that you need to put something in code that will satisfy the executive branch and outline what the attorney general thought would be within the purview of the legislature to do. And there is need to meet in the interim. When we only meet every 2 years, there are certain things that come along that need some approval. And I think that what we put in 2055 is appropriate. I think it's within the legislative arena that we have the authority to do, and I think we've crafted a bill that does that. The governor saw otherwise, but I think the House will override the veto.
One of the governor's arguments is it creates a subset of the legislature that doesn't even have a majority of the members. It's just the appropriators and the leadership, the floor leadership.
That's true, Dave, and we've had that conversation sometimes in our budget section meetings, that certain ideas that come along or funding requests, should we be doing those things? We do encourage people that come before us that they should have brought that before the full legislative body. Sometimes they haven't thought of it, or something comes up midstream that they need to get worked on. So I think it's appropriate to have it. We never make huge funding decisions. They're usually small items.
And there's language that is attached to a bill that has passed that the budget section shall look at X, Y, or Z.
That's correct. And in all of the budgets that we've worked on now since we've crafted that bill, it references Senate Bill 2255 and the section of code that's in, that the decision we're making are within the authority of that section of law.
One bill that we talked about earlier, you know, before we went on the air for the interview, you're going to be carrying, I think, the bonding bill for buildings on college campuses.
Yes, that'll be maybe tomorrow or Monday for sure. That's Senate Bill 2297. And we're going to be asking the House to approve this bill. And it'll provide bonding for the following. Dunbar Hall on the University of North Dakota State University. Gamble Hall, which is on UND's campus, the Fine Arts Building on Val City State campus, and then Pulver Hall on the Dickinson State, and it's $80 million of bonding for those four projects.
The one thing that's out, though, is the agriculture building that was supposed to be at NDSU.
Yes, and that's Harris Hall, as it's referred to, and it also would involve Northern Crop Institutes and a meat lab. It's sorely needed. There's no question about that. During our hearing, we saw videos of Harris Hall, and it does need work, and it needs to be replaced. I wouldn't be surprised if sometime during this session Harris Hall it re-enters the scene, but in this particular bonding bill, it's not included.
Was it a hard leap of faith for you to go to bonding, because we haven't done bonding in North Dakota for a number of years?
Yeah, for me personally, it was. And we've paid cash for most of these major projects. Our total indebtedness at this point is very low. In fact, it'll be paid off in, I think, about two or three bienniums. We would be debt-free. But because of the legacy fund earnings and the money that people see coming in through that venue and all the earnings, people are anxious to start going forward, spending money on some projects. And university campuses do need some upgrades on these buildings. They're seeing that we can bond and we'll have the revenue to repay the bonds with no issue. So we're probably a little ahead of ourselves. If we waited actually a biennium or two, we could pay cash for these projects. But some of these buildings are in desperate need of repair.
I have to ask about Gamble Hall, being a UND alum. Mm-hmm. How did that get into the mix?
Gamble Hall came forward because UND has identified that there is a large donor that's going to donate $20 million if the legislature would put forth a project. So that is going to involve a $55 million commitment from UND and $15 million from the state. It's going to be $9 million cash from this biennium and $6 million worth of bonding, which brings it to 15. The other 55 has to come from UND, and they've, as I mentioned, they've identified a $20 million donor for that project.
And do you know what the building is going to be used for, or is it a renovation or a new building?
It would be a new building.
Okay. Do you know what it would be used for?
I think it's business administration.
Okay. Yep. They're talking about a business school at UND.
Yeah, so. That's what it is. Okay. Yes.
Let me ask you about the legacy fund, because we just referred to it. The legacy fund earnings are there. And, you know, Senator Wardner was talking about trying to have a bill to create buckets or silos for the use of legacy fund earnings. And apparently a study is coming out. Is that something that you can get your head around to?
Well, Dave, I think it's going to be important to prioritize. This legacy fund is going to spin off a lot of interest over time. I mean, we're nearly $6 billion in the fund now. And this biennium at the end, it's going to probably be somewhere between $400 and $500 million of interest. So the requests are going to be frequent and often for tapping into those earnings. I think it's going to be important that we do prioritize how we spend the money. There's going to be a lot of fantastic ideas coming forward to use that money. I think it should be used for projects that do leave a legacy or really benefit all of our citizens. And so I think the bucket idea, it's worth studying, or the silo idea, I guess it is in this particular instance, because we do want to make effective use of those earnings. And if we can prioritize and everybody agree to how we should spend those funds, I think it's appropriate to study it.
And not to put too fine a point on it, what I'm hearing is one-time projects, infrastructure are two of the big priorities.
That's going to be a big emphasis, I'm sure, because it will allow us to do some major projects and have the ability to pay cash for those, because it's going to be phenomenal to have those earnings coming forward.
And one thing that I did hear more specifically is road projects, because there's less federal money available. There seems to be little appetite to raise the gas tax. Maybe this is a source.
Very possibly, Dave. We do need our roads worked on throughout the state. You know, we've heard so much about the oil traffic out west. But I have to say, in the eastern part of the state too, with the amount of commodities that are being carried over the roadways nowadays, is really had a hike. You know, now we're doing corn and soybeans. That's a lot of volume. And these grain terminals are being set up in small communities. I have several around my district, and that's all by truck. The rail is, for the most part, out of our rural areas. And the truck traffic has increased many, many times, heavy loads. And so the eastern part of the state, too, needs a lot of infrastructure work. And then we have a lot of bridges, too, in the counties and townships that are in desperate need of repair. And so I think those are going to be very, very critical to look at. So infrastructure is big throughout the state.
So you couple that with the Prairie Dog bill that was passed and signed into law, and there is a pool of money to do some of these things.
I think with the Prairie Dog and the potential of what we can do with some of the earnings going forward, I'm excited about what we can do for our state. The Prairie Dog Bill, which I was a co-sponsor, does take some of that oil revenue, which is a wonderful gift that we have in our state, and spread it throughout all parts of the state, and send some to the non-oil producing areas for projects there. And I know that the cities, the townships, the counties are all excited about being able to share in some of the oil revenue as we go forward into the bienniums in the future.
One issue that might be coming up, and I'll admit I haven't done the due diligence to work on it, is that there might have to be some more money for clearing roads because of the various snowstorms we've had and also the flood fight. I understand that something coming with the guard budget, correct?
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that, Dave. Just recently, just this past week, we did add, I believe it was about $8.1 million into the Adjutant General's budget that would provide money for townships in non-oil producing counties. I believe the number was about $5,000 per township. And that's going to go to all the counties, and there are some areas of the state that really need the help because they had 80 to 100 inches of snow, so they have snow removal costs, and now their roads are washing out. You know, losing culverts, overland floodings taking out the county and township roads. And now with the storm this weekend, I mean, that area of the state is even looking at an additional, possibly a foot of snow. We just felt it was helpful to see what we could do for those counties throughout the state because it's been a tough winter. And there is a disaster release fund that we've had for a long time. And we're gonna use some of those funds to help out these townships.
Now, was it 2 years ago or 4 years? I thought it was 2 years ago that DOT shut down some of their garages.
Yes.
And how is that working a couple years later?
Well, Dave, two of those were in my area. Finley was in my district, and Courtney was very close to my district. And in the DOT budget going forward now, we put a section in there that the DOT would establish seasonal services beginning in approximately November 1 and going through March. If they could find temporary or seasonal employees, it would man those areas. It's worked well. In fact, one of the individuals that works in the Cooperstown site lives in Wimbledon or Courtney, and now he mans that Courtney site, which was going to be abandoned for the winter months, and they recently hired a person that can staff the Finley site. So I think it's working well because now, and we've had a tough winter, a lot of snow, people have been able to operate out of those sections that were previously going to be empty. So I think it's working well.
Yeah, the concern was, of course, that plows might be delayed, but you're saying that due to some creative thinking, that's not happening, which they're getting the roads plowed in time now.
And Dave, I have to give credit to North Dakota Department of Transportation. They were really willing to work with us this session because we have a section in their funding bill now for the next biennium that establishes that practice. And they were very willing to work with us to look for the seasonal employees if they could find one that lived near that site that was going to be vacant and fill that spot. And they've been doing good work.
I have to ask you about this, and it was an amendment that was added to, I think, the PERS bill to go for another two-year study about doing self-insurance for, or, you know, state insurance and getting away from private providers, doing a self-insurance plan for state employees. How do you come down on that?
Well, Dave, we've had that discussion each of the last several sessions, actually ever since Sanford Health took over the insurance from Blue Cross Blue Shield. We try to encourage them to look for bids in each of the last 2 years. It's a six-year contract. So that contract will be up at the end of this biennium. So now this time, it has to go out for rebid. And we're just asking that when they do that, that they ask the people that, you know, go for the bid to include a quote for self-insurance. And I think they maybe have done that before, but we really want to emphasize this year. Most of the time, a large group of employees benefits from going self-insured. They're just a big enough pool that they can do that, self-insure, and lower the rates because it takes the risk off of the provider, the insurance provider, and puts it on the state. But with that amount of employees that would be in the system, I think we could lower the premiums. And the other thing in that section we wanted PERS to do, and that's the Public Employee Retirement System.
Yes.
We want them to run their the bids through the legislature so we can at least take a look. The last time they signed it without the legislature having any input, and we just feel that when we fund that, we should at least have the opportunity to take a look at the options and what the pricing is before they sign the contract. So that's part of that as well. And I did speak with the director of PERS, and he indicated that his intention would be that during the next session, they would allow us to do that, because they wouldn't sign the contract until after the session was over, because they need to know the level of funding that we provide before they can actually sign. So we're pleased that that's in the bill. Hopefully it stays there in the Senate, and then we can have a look at the budgeting side of the health insurance. It's getting to be a big expenditure for the state.
One more quick thing about public employees' retirement. Mm-hmm. There's also the potential to study going to a defined contribution plan from the defined benefit plan. Is this something you're interested in looking at?
Oh, by all means. Most people are in a defined contribution, or a 401k, as most people know it as. The pension plans are, I think, across the country starting to disappear, I think that the employee has more flexibility sometimes with a defined contribution. It's portable. They can move it when they move from company to company, perhaps. And I think that most times, I think they feel that over time, the benefits that you could have from a 401k is better than a pension. But that's going to be a big debate. We've asked for that to be studied in the past, and they've looked at it, but it needs to be continued in the conversation.
In the few seconds we have left, I'm going to challenge you. What day does the gavel fall?
Well, I said, it would be the Thursday after Easter was my... So I'm starting to think that that's maybe not going to happen. Oh, it'll be the week after Easter.
Okay.
Whether it's Thursday, Friday, or into the weekend, I'm pretty confident it'll be that. We'll have about 5 days left.
Representative Don Vigasaw, thank you for being here.
Dave, it's always a pleasure. You do a great job at the Capitol, and it's always a pleasure to sit down with an interview for you.
Well, I appreciate that, too. Thank you.
Great.
A bill that has passed that will change North Dakota's corporate farming law. Right now, only a specific list of relatives can take over ownership of a farm. But as political correspondent Chad Mira tells us, that list is growing.
Representative Brandy Pyle's husband has a farm that's been in the family for generations.
Something that North Dakota prides itself on. My husband is a sixth generation farmer. My kids are sixth generation in our house. So we want to continue that.
It's a corporate farm.
My husband actually farms with his first cousin.
If they were to keep the farm in the family in the future by passing it on to their kids, second cousins would be farming together.
It still stays in the family. It still stays in the bloodline.
But that's not allowed under the state's corporate farming laws. Only this list of relatives can own a farm corporation. But House Bill 1388, which has passed the House and Senate, will add second cousins to the list. Senator Jim Dotson-Rodd is worried about the precedent this would set.
I think it's just going to be a track that we're going to have a hard time getting out of, that once we begin to expand this corporate entities in our state that are farming, it's going to be hard to turn the next one down.
But Pete Hanabit with the North Dakota Farm Bureau says this could save farms.
When the farm is broken up into parts, it's harder for them to survive. And so to keep the family together in one unit, whether they're first cousins or second cousins, we think is the most important thing.
So farms can thrive and stay in the family.
We're trying to recruit people back into our state and continue that great heritage that we have.
And Chad Miro joins us right now to talk about what's going on. What are you watching in terms of things that are coming up over the next week or so?
Well, I think like just about everyone else, I want to see how this newest veto battle shakes out. Of course, we know the Senate has already voted to override the veto. It doesn't look like there will be much of an issue with that in the House either. It's such an interesting debate over who has this budget authority. This is an issue we first saw brought up last legislative session. And here it is again. So we'll see how this one plays out, if it's similar to last time. But I also want to know, and we might not find this out for a while, but will this lead to maybe renewed effort to meet, for the legislature to convene more often than on a biannual basis? Are there going to be people who say this is just proof that we need to meet every year to address some of these issues?
But of course, the authority of the budget section is narrowly defined according to this bill,
you know,
in terms of it has to be legislative intent language in a bill and things like that. So it's narrowly defined.
It is very narrowly defined. In my interview with Senator Wardner there, he said he believes that should address any of the concerns that arise from it. And this is a bill that ultimately so was voted on by the entire legislature. There was only one vote between the Senate and the House against it. So you know, I think their viewpoint there is that the whole legislature agrees the budget section can and should have this authority.
Any other sticky wickets out there that you're looking at?
Well, I think I still, you know, obviously the ethics bill. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to be talking about that till almost the very end. And interestingly, kind of on that same note, is the legislature's moving forward with their effort to kind of make it a little more difficult to get constitutional amendments initiated amendments passed. If voters now approve a constitutional amendment at the ballot, the legislature could have another vote on it themselves. That's something that it still has a hurdle or two to clear, but it looks like that bill's moving forward as well.
Well, we'll just say more to come.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Well, thank you for joining us for North Dakota Legislative Review. I'm Dave Thompson.